I'm here today with Chris Willems. Chris has a degree in biochemistry from Oxford and over the recent years has studied nutrition, body energy and the general areas of health. But Chris, what took you into this area we're going to talk about today?
Well, as you know, I've been involved in cancer research for 4 to 5 years, and I produce a major magazine called Icon, which goes now into 250 hospitals in the UK, and from there a website which has 22,000 hits every month on complementary therapies. And this led me to look at the growing incidence of child cancers and then child diseases in general. I've talked to experts, professors, biochemists, microbiologists, and I've become increasingly surprised by the enormous amount of research, knowledge and information on what I call this best-kept health secret. Quite genuinely, I was surprised, I think you can say taken aback. It brought together for me, logically, for the first time, a whole number of conditions and illnesses, from lowered immune systems to allergies, eczema, psoriasis and asthma, then fatigue, lack of energy, headaches, then irritable bowel syndrome, high cholesterol, even arthritis, diabetes and cancer. This secret for me involves a world of bacteria and microbes, of probiotics and prebiotics that positively and enormously aid our general health and well-being.
Hang on, Chris. First things first, what's a probiotic?
A probiotic is a microbial, for example, bacterial food supplement designed to top up the residential beneficial bacteria you have in your body.
But I thought that microbes were bad for you.
Well, of course, you know, bacteria do cause illnesses like typhus and cholera, and you get botulism toxins from bacteria. E. coli, salmonella, listeria, there's a whole wealth of bad diseases. And you even get ones that infect NHS hospitals, I read in the paper. But yeah, of course, microbes cause diseases, and they don't necessarily cause those sorts of extreme dangerous ones. They cause things like infections of tonsillitis or thrush, chest ailments. You get bacteria like Helicobacter pylori, which causes stomach ulcers. And they can even infect our wounds and then cause other illnesses. And yes, they can cause death. And people don't seem to realise about bacteria that they're all over your skin, they're in your eyes, they're in your ears. Someone said to me that there were more bacteria on your tongue than there are people living on this planet at the moment. They're bad, they're ugly, they're scary, we're all under attack. Well, that's the current misconception.
OK, Chris, you say that's the misconception, but then what's the truth?
Well, as I say, it is a misconception. I call it the good, the bad and the ugly. We've talked about the bad and the ugly, but actually the majority of bacteria are innocuous or even helpful to us. People don't understand that bacteria were the first living organisms on this planet almost 4 billion years ago. We've grown up with them. They actually were precursors to us. They have DNA, and we got DNA as a result of them. Our lives were linked to theirs. We actually coexist. It's called symbiosis. They do things for us and we do things for them. In the modern world, for example, bacteria make our wine. They live on the outside of the grapes, and we break the grape skin open, they make our wine. They make our yogurts. They're involved in our sewage management. They're involved in our compost heap management. We use bacteria all the time.
OK, so I understand that they're actually helpful to us, but specifically, how do they help our health?
Well, bacteria help our health in a number of ways. Let's start with what I'll call it level one. Let's go back 200, 300 years. We used to have bacteria coming into our bodies all the time. We used to drink raw milk. We used to eat fruit and vegetables that we just picked, and they had bacteria on the outside. Our water came out of wells with bacteria. Yes, sure, we could get nasty ones. And those nasty ones made communities ill. They might even cause people to die. But the people who actually survived developed increased immunity, so that next time there was a nasty similar to that one come along, they had better immune systems. And that process is called adaptation. So level one, we actually, in the world of evolution, needed bacteria to get stronger and protect us next time something nasty came along. Now, the problem is that we've changed the whole balance of our relationship with bacteria overnight. Now, by overnight, I don't mean in the last 24 hours. I mean in the last 150 years, because in the history of the planet, that is overnight. So the whole balance has changed, and I call them weapons of mass destruction. We now have in our lives antibiotics, irradiated and pasteurised food, chlorinated water, drugs. All of these things can change the bacterial relationship, the bacterial balance that we have in our bodies. Now, that was level one. That's talking about really nasty things, the sort of, you know, diphtherias of this world and so on. But bacteria don't have to be absolute nasties. There's a new realisation that many are simply just almost innocuous but developing agents for our full immune systems. For example, they found in 2001 in research studies that our kids, if they have early contact with household pets or if they're brought up on farms, both are linked to less atopic disease.
Sorry, what's an atopic disease, Chris?
Well, atopic disease, let's turn it on its head. An atopic disease is our sanitised city children are developing more eczema, allergies and asthma. And they're doing this because of lowered immune systems. Again, there's been research in 2002 that shows that these kids with more eczema and asthma allergies, they have lowered levels of lactobacilli inside their body, which is a type of bacteria. They actually even have adult-type levels of bifidobacteria, which is another bacteria. So they're clearly completely out of balance, these kids. We also, in our magazine, our cancer magazine, we covered the fact that if you take antibiotics in the first couple of years of your life, you have a much, much higher allergy risk by the age of seven. The report, which actually only came out of America about 6 months ago, said we need to find out why. Well, actually, the truth is we know why. Research studies have shown that even relatively innocuous bacteria help our immune systems develop. For example, our immune systems become activated and developed in the mucosal system, especially in the intestine. What does this mean? Well, it means that certain bacteria growing there have now been shown clearly in research, and there's a lot of research studies, to be essential for the human healthy immune system, essential for developing things like cytokines, immunoglobulins, and even natural killer cells, which protect us against everything from viruses to cancer.
So surely our doctors know this?
Well, I feel a bit sorry for our doctors, actually, because it's very, very new knowledge. This is a market that's moving like a rocket. By the year 1997, I think there were about five or six major studies in this field. In 2003-2004 alone, there were 774 published studies in scientific journals. There were 77 clinical trials. Now, I don't know whether you know, but clinical trials are amazingly expensive to run, very, very important. The whole drug industry, you know, believes totally in clinical trials. Well, there are 77 clinical trials on bacteria inside your body and what they can do for you just in an 18-month period. Now, the important thing is, and I do wonder if your average GP knows this, that every time you give someone an antibiotic or a drug, you're actually damaging the immune system. It's not just doctors that don't seem to understand this, but health authorities too. These weapons of mass destruction we have are indiscriminate. And they don't just kill the bad bacteria, they kill our good bacteria, our healthy bacteria, our helpful bacteria that we need to build our immune systems. And I think this whole area needs a major rethink in the light of this new and very serious research.
So, how do probiotics help then?
Well, it may amaze you this, but so far 400 different species of bacteria living in your body have been identified, and there could be another 400 not yet identified. Some, lactobacilli for example, bifidobacteria, are beneficial. Some, are harmful and dangerous. Now, the trick is to have the good guys outnumber the bad guys. Now, this is easy, of course, if you go back 200 or 300 years or you're living today on a desert island, because you're going to eat natural chickens which have no antibiotics in them, you're going to be drinking raw milk, and you're going to have natural water with no high chlorine levels. But if you live in Slough or Preston or somewhere like that, you need to top up the good guys probably every day to keep them in pole position.
OK, so most of us don't live on a desert island. We need to top up. But how do we get the good guys without taking supplements?
Well, normally you get them quite naturally. But here again lies a lot of the problem. For example, during natural childbirth, babies take bifidobacteria from their mother in the birth canal. Unfortunately, cesareans have put paid to that. Raw organic foods on the outside have a bloom of bacteria, but pesticides and irradiation have put paid to that. Equally, raw, naturally fermented dairy products, they also give you natural bacteria, but the EU's put paid to that. So there's a problem. We're not getting the sorts of bacteria we used to get.
So I need to supplement, OK? I need to give myself them, but what are these good guys going to do?
Beneficial bacteria in your gut, under normal conditions, just get on with their daily lives. They have this daily life, you know. They eat their favourite foods. They produce acid mixtures that aid our digestion. They produce waste products, some of which we actually use and need, like vitamins. They cut up our food for us. Some of the food molecules we eat, we couldn't digest because they're much too big to get through our intestinal walls. But bacteria manage to cut them up into small, more digestible pieces. And on top of that, they act as our foot soldiers. I've talked about how they help our defences and our natural antibody system grow, but they're also our first line of defence. They are our foot soldiers. And this takes me to level three. They're not just stimulators of our immune system, they're actually a part of it, because by eating their favourite foods, by digesting things for us, they change the acidity of our stomach. It's called a pH. They change the pH of our stomach through their own diets so that some of the bad guys can't live, can't grow, can't metabolise. So it stops those bad guys in their tracks. Some of the good bacteria also can digest and attack the bad guys. So they can work, you know, at two levels there.
Everyday terms. Give me some examples.
Well, I can give you several. For example, in the stomach, there's a particularly nasty bug called Helicobacter pylori, and that's linked with stomach ulcers and indeed even stomach cancer. Now, what happens? This bacteria dives into the mucous membrane of the stomach and gets right up against the lining of the stomach wall. Now, your body then sends out antibodies to kind of kick it out, but of course, the antibodies can't get there because they're the other side of the wall. So a fight then goes on across this wall and you end up getting very irritated, your stomach does at least, and you end up with possibly an ulcer and even cases of stomach cancer. Now, beneficial bacteria can attack Helicobacter pylori and kill it off. So that's, you know, one great advantage. Let's go further down. Let's talk about the intestine. In the intestine, rogue bacteria, nasty guys, and yeast, for example, can cause irritation much the same way in the intestine. And they can even grow like yeasts, like mushrooms, and punch holes. Their roots will punch holes in your intestine walls. Well, that leads to things like irritable bowel syndrome. Well, again, beneficial bacteria can chomp their way through those. They can change the pH and stop those growing. Now, if you've got holes in your intestine wall, some of these nasties can get across into your bloodstream. And at very minimum, they can send toxins across into your bloodstream. Recently, we covered in the magazine the fact that cinnamon could reduce the symptoms in some cases of diabetes. Now, the reason it can do that is because these yeasts can get into the bloodstream and then they stick to your cells on receptor sites. These are the bad guys. And they block those receptor sites. So you eat lots of sugar. You really want your insulin to get it off out of your bloodstream into your cells. right? If it can't, that's diabetes. And they found that cinnamon and beneficial bacteria can get rid of the yeast from these receptor sites, clean up the cells for you, and so you actually feel less symptoms of diabetes. And there's one more extreme case. Again, these bugs flowing around your body, they're anaerobic. They don't like oxygen. They don't use oxygen. They can colonise certain areas. And again, we covered in the magazine, would you believe that women who take 25 plus lots of antibiotics in their lives have twice the risk of breast cancer? There's a theory that these colonising yeasts actually cut off the oxygen supply to some of the breast cells, and that turns them into cancer cells. Of course, another theory would be that you obviously don't have very many beneficial bacteria to allow these nasties through, and so those beneficial bacteria are not there boosting your immune system. So that's another way of going. So we still don't know exactly how all these things work, but you can see straight away that there's a simple fact of life. If you have too few beneficial bacteria, then you have more bad guys in your gut, you have more circulating bad guys, you have more diseases, and you have a weaker immune system. Fact. So any other questions bugging you?
Okay, Chris, but seriously, what do we really know?
Well, as I've said, there's masses of research. It's a real hot topic now, and we've even got a large number of clinical trials. But it's important to stress it's still early days, and we've only even studied 400 of these beneficial bacteria so far, and then by no means fully. We've not looked at many of the combinations, and that might be very, very important. What is clear, though, is that these beneficial bacteria are very individual, and they have very different abilities, each one. So, for example, Lactobacillus is very different in terms of characteristics and abilities to bifidobacteria, in turn different to Enterococcus, Bacillus, or Saccharomyces, which is a yeast. So we don't really know exactly how all these things work, and certainly they may work terribly well in combinations, and we're not there yet by any means. What I will say is that I genuinely believe that this secret, this discovery, when we get round to using it in our daily lives and in our therapies and treatments, could be more important than penicillin or indeed anything else we've even seen in medicine so far. It actually wrong-foots all our previous thinking.
So what's the answer?
Well, the answer, while we're learning, frankly, and with all these weapons of mass destruction around us, is that we need the presence of the widest range of the various species in our bodies as we can possibly get hold of, ideally representing the 400 good guys we know about. And also, frankly, we need to feed them their favourite foods so they divide more and multiply more.
So can you give me a solid example of that?
Well, probably the simplest and best example is mother's milk. Women are moving away from breastfeeding. They don't feed babies for such a long time as they used to. Well, this frankly is daft, because we know that this boosts the immune system of babies. Mother's milk contains galactose, and breastfed babies have 10 times the bifidobacteria of bottle-fed infants. Why? Because galactose is the favourite food of bifidobacteria. What we also now know from research is that these babies have significantly higher levels of immunoglobulins, and these afford protection against, for example, rotavirus. Now, you know, babies get lots of diarrhoea. Well, believe it or not, this is caused by rotavirus. And less babies get rotavirus if they're breastfed than bottle-fed. So perfectly simple, good example of how a prebiotic works.
So now you've put another word in here, prebiotics. What's the difference between a prebiotic and a probiotic?
Did you know that antibiotics literally comes from the Greek? And so it means antibiotic, anti-life. So it kills life. And probiotic, obviously, therefore, is pro-life. And prebiotic is pre-life. Prebiotics are the favourite food of beneficial bacteria. So prebiotics, therefore, can strengthen, increase the immune system because they stimulate, grow, feed more of the particular bacterial strains. Prebiotics, officially, they're non-digestible or fibre components of food, the things we don't eat much of these days. For example, whole oats, whole grains, fresh vegetables, especially greens, from chlorella to cabbage, wheatgrass to chicory. Seeds, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, sprinkle a few on your breakfast. Liquids like aloe vera and olive oil contain lignans. Fresh and dried fruits, bananas, apricots, good old prunes.
Chris, this is opening my eyes so much. Can you give me some examples of what these prebiotic foods can achieve?
Well, an example, something called inulin. Inulin comes from chicory, onions, that sort of thing. It promotes the growth of bifidobacteria again in your gut this time. Now, what can bifidobacteria do? Well, for example, they can cut up long fibre products that you couldn't digest into much smaller pieces, and these are called short-chain fatty acids. Now, short-chain fatty acids, in the same research, have been shown to lower cancer rates in the intestine and lower cholesterol levels. This is really interesting. Short-chain fatty acids are things like butyrate and acetate and so on. And they actually can lower your cholesterol levels in your whole body. And I suppose this takes me to level four, really, because level four is that beneficial bacteria actually produce good things that you need and use. And people don't seem to realise this at all. Not just short-chain fatty acids, but biotin, folic acid, vitamin B12. They're all B vitamins. They're all associated with the nervous system, your brain, how DNA divides and things like that. We know, for example, that people with colon cancer have low levels of folic acid. We know they have low levels of beneficial bacteria. Unfortunately, we just don't seem to do anything about either. Then there's vitamin K. Now, that's a really interesting one because American research shows that 18 to 44-year-olds are deficient in vitamin K now in America, and it's probably true about Britain as well. Vitamin K classically comes from greens. But now the research that I've read over the last few months shows that actually it's not just the greens, it's the beneficial bacteria that are making the vitamin K out of the greens. It's fascinating. Another very interesting finding from research is that beneficial bacteria can even break down estrogen products in the gut. Now, that's really interesting because we know, for example, that higher estrogen levels in the body are linked to everything from breast cancer to prostate cancer and a number of cancers. So this could be a really significant finding.
What happens if you don't get enough of the good guys, though?
Well, clearly, you can get a deficiency in naturally produced vitamins. So you need to start supplementing with more vitamins. But would that really help? I mean, if it's not just the cabbage, it's actually having the bacteria to make the cabbage give you vitamin K, then does it really help? Frankly, I do worry about whether some of these supplements can work without beneficial bacteria in the same way the foods can't work without the beneficial bacteria. Now, we know, we talked about prebiotics, we know, for example, that herbs, and this is an interesting one, we know that herbs can stimulate beneficial bacteria too. Of course, you know, the world doesn't use herbs like it used to. Go back 400 years, Hampton Court was surrounded by herb gardens, not by rose gardens. Garlic, turmeric, echinacea, propolis, slippery elm, cat's claw, licorice, good old-fashioned licorice. They all can act as prebiotics and stimulate probiotics and beneficial bacteria in your body.
But what are the enemies of the so-called state then for us?
Well, the enemies of the state, they're very real, as we've covered. Antibiotics are enemies of the state. Highly chlorinated water, when you get that flush of chlorine out of the tap. Pesticides. Poor diet. High fat, low fibre. Alcohol. Smoking. Stress, that would be an enemy of the state. Rushed meals, people don't realise, just rushing your meal will actually disturb the bacterial balance. Travel, of course, if you get on a plane, you will get jamming, for example, in your stomach, pyloric sphincter sometimes. You'll get to Vietnam and Turkey or whatever you're going, and you get all manner of other bacteria. Ageing, that's another enemy of the state. Now, I find this really interesting for a couple of reasons. Think about modern diets. High fat, low fibre. Is it any surprise then that these low fibre diets are doing us harm? I just wasn't fully aware of what harm. Now I understand more what is going on. So, for example, as you age, you might need to top up your beneficial bacteria even more than normal.
So you've just described the ingredients for every single person's life that's listening to this recording.
Yeah, the modern world.
Absolutely. But how much top-up is enough?
Well, ideally you need at least one, but ideally several strains, giving you a width of the species, the genera that you have in your body. That's the first thing. Secondly, you need, oh, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 billion bacteria at least. But most importantly, they should be live bacteria. And I'll come on to this. And thirdly, they've got to be able to get there. They've got to be able to get down to the intestine. And this is actually a bit of a problem.
So we're talking about probiotics. What is a probiotic?
Well, I gave you part one of the definition earlier on. It was a microbial supplement. But there is a very important second part to the definition, and that is it's a bacterium from a strain that's proven in clinical trials to survive the transit through the stomach and so on, and to have a beneficial effect in the large intestine when it gets there. So it's got to be proven to survive the transit, and secondly, it's got to be proven to actually do something when it gets to its destination, the gut. And that's really quite important.
So are you saying unless it's proven, you can't call it a probiotic?
Absolutely right. Unless it's got clinical trials behind it, it can't legally be called a probiotic. And this is where you can get people misleading you. Now, hitherto, I used to eat those healthy live yogurts. Now, I didn't understand, perhaps that's because I'm stupid or something, but I didn't understand that many potential probiotics are actually killed off in the stomach and upper regions of the intestine long before they ever get to the colon. So saying you're a live yogurt is no guarantee that these live bacteria are ever going to get to the destination intended and do anything for you. So unless a pot actually says contains probiotics on it, it might be virtually useless to you.
You mentioned strains there. So what sort of strains are probiotic?
Well, this is the important thing. You've got species, and then within species you've got strains. And people talk about Acidophilus, for example. But Acidophilus is a species. There's loads of strains. And as I said, some of those strains in the yoghurt might get there and do the job, and others might never get through the stomach. So it's very important to talk about strains rather than species. Lactobacillus casei is one often used as a probiotic. Another one's Lactobacillus shirota. Another one, Lactobacillus immunitas. And there's a fourth one that's quite commonly used, increasingly used as we learn more about it, which is Lactobacillus plantarum. And that's a strain called 229V, would you believe?
And why do some come in milk and some dried? I get confused here.
Well, it's historical, really. These bacteria have often been used to ferment milk products. The milk can actually give it a little protection in the stomach, I suppose, and also acts as a possible food source, but it tends to be a historical factor. To be responsible, I think I ought to say there are a couple of negatives. There's a big Belgian research study, I think it took place last year, where they took 30 dried and 25 milk varieties of probiotics. And they showed, and this is quite important, that only 13% of all of them contained the strains listed. Some even contained strains that weren't listed, extra strains. Secondly, a third of dried supplements weren't alive. So it'd be very clear that you've got live strains that you're putting into your body.
But how do you actually ensure the delivery?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to go to a reputable manufacturer. You must make sure what you're buying from some people who know what they're talking about and they know their stuff. Secondly, you must make sure that the strains that are in this probiotic are actually strains that have been proven to work in clinical trials. So they get through the stomach and they do something when they get to the intestine. Thirdly, I would suggest the most important thing is that you actually take these probiotics about 40 minutes after eating food, and preferably a carbohydrate meal, because carbohydrates, I don't know when you know, but carbohydrates reduce the acid in the stomach. So these are more likely to get through the stomach. Always take them with cool liquids. Never ever take them with a hot cup of tea or anything, because that will kill them off. And whatever source of probiotic, always keep it in the fridge.
Okay, now for the $64,000 question. What illnesses have they actually been proven to help?
Well, a lot, and this is vast. And as I say, this is the surprise to me. This is the true secret that I didn't know about. Let's start in my own field. Let's start with cancer, because there's some general areas that then knock onto other sorts of illness. We know, for example, that beneficial bacteria break down toxins and carcinogens. I talked about breakdown of estrogen products, but they also break down things like nitrosamines and aflatoxin, which actually can lead to certain diseases, and especially cancer. We know they destroy yeasts or fungi and Helicobacter pylori, so they destroy bad guys. We know they develop the immune system. There's a big study just taking place in the EU called the SICAN study, and they're showing already there that beneficial bacteria keep polyps in check. Now, polyps are the precursor to colon cancer, so you get this growth, and these things will actually keep the growth from turning into cancer. There's another little bacteria, a little bug called Streptococcus thermopolis. And this has clear, proven anti-cancer, anti-tumour benefits, for example. We talked about Lactobacilli casei earlier on. We know that reduces toxins. We know it increases natural killer cells. Natural killer cells will actually destroy cancer cells and viruses and a lot of the other things that we're going to come on and talk to. So that's cancer. Autism. Autism is a really hot topic at the moment. There's lots of very recent research. For example, Lactobacillus plantarum 229V, I knew it had come up again, that helps reduce the symptoms of autism. It's been shown quite clearly too. There's a big study. It was reported in Nature in May 2004, especially effective where the child has had antibiotics or drugs. Especially effective. Well, let's move on, because that whole idea of having antibiotics early, as I said earlier on, links to more allergies and asthma in our kids. And studies show that taking beneficial bacteria, probiotics, can actually reduce the incidence of asthma, allergies and so on, eczema in children. But here's an interesting thing. Do you know that if pregnant women take probiotics, their offspring have less incidence of eczema and asthma and allergies? Isn't that incredible?
Amazing.
Where should we go next? How about immune system deficiency? We know that in your immune system, as I said earlier on, the beneficial bacteria can stimulate the production of everything from cytokines to natural killer cells to immunoglobulin levels and so on. So we know that your whole immune system is benefited by beneficial bacteria. Kidney stones. We know, for example, that probiotics in research reduce oxalate levels in the blood, and high oxalate levels are a precursor to kidney stones, in fact even to gout in some cases. So presumably probiotics will actually reduce your gout levels. High cholesterol, hypertension, lactobacilli reduce both, and that's probably down to the short chain fatty acids again. Cystitis, vaginosis, probiotics help correct pH levels and they can destroy yeasts that cause both of those. Stomach ulcers, I've talked about, Helicobacter pylori. And then, you know, I could go on, lactose intolerance, irritable bowel syndrome, diarrhea, inflammatory bowel disease, lupus, Crohn's. You know, there's research, not one study, but several studies in each of these areas and more. Do you know, for example, that beneficial bacteria can even heal the intestinal wall?
Amazing. Well, I'm a diabetic, so I'm going to, from now on inwards, this becomes a part of my daily diet every single day.
Yeah.
But what are the signs of a deficiency if an illness isn't showing?
Well, this is where I worry everybody. This is where I worry everybody, because the signs are so commonplace. Bad breath, body odour, bad gums, bad teeth, mouth ulcers, bloating, wind, indigestion. They're the sort of commonest ones, I suppose. But it could be diarrhoea, or it could be other extreme, constipation. Then you get women's infections, candida, cystitis, thrush, or in men it might be yellow toenails. Frequent colds in your kids might show it up. Allergies, as we discussed, acne, eczema, psoriasis, high cholesterol, as I talked just then. Even fatigue, just general all-round tiredness, can be down to a lack of beneficial bacteria and the right ones.
Sounds like you're describing the entire House of Commons and House of Lords.
That's right. Well, you know, I think I can honestly say I've been shocked by all this, because I didn't really know all this until I started looking in depth. And the more I've gone into it, the more I've found out. And I don't know that any of this is being used by your local GP, because I just don't think he knows. You know, I think we'll look back one day on this era of drugs and antibiotics and understand how they were actually damaging our immune systems and our health as much as solving problems. Thousands of research studies can't be wrong. Now, there's something in here. We've got to take a serious look at these beneficial bacteria, a very serious look at probiotics and prebiotics as the source, even the secret source, of our good health and well-being. It's, as I said, it's a huge topic. It's a hot topic. And our knowledge is just beginning. And all I can say, frankly, to anybody listening to this tape is, meanwhile, while they're working out what we should do about it, you know, for the sake of your own good health, take probiotics as wide a range as possible, but focusing on lactobacillus, bifidobacteria. Feed them wisely, give them the foods they like to eat, which is fibre foods and so on, and do it every day, because you never know when you're short of them.
And it's never too late to start, by the sounds of it, and the older we get, the more we need them.
Since I've been on this project, I've been taking probiotics every day for the last, 3 months, and my sinus trouble, which I've had for about 5 years, has cleared up.